You know, I can't live without your love and affection. That's what they say. when you talk about Matthew and Gunnar Nelson, the Nelson twins, formerly known for their hair, how is everybody doing?
Well, what happened to our hair?
That's right. I don't know. What did happen to our house?
Well, it happens. John, just so, it does, just coincidentally, yeah. That happens to be the title of your new book.
We actually wrote a book of memoirs, 530 pages of mayhem, and it is so much fun to be able to say that we still get along with each other. We still have hair that we can cut,
yes.
But there's more to us, and I think that's the whole reason why, we were just talking about this, the main reason why we wrote the book was just because we had so many stories, primarily the one of our origins and kind of dispelling a lot of the preconceived misperceptions of how it was very easy for us and things were kind of handed to us. And it was like a hobby for us.
Yeah.
You know, music to us was our salvation, and our twinship kind of got us through it. And we decided to write it all down.
Well, taking a look at your family history, your grandfather, Ozzy, had a number one, I guess it was band leader orchestra tune. Your father, Ricky, God, one of my absolute favorites, I have to tell you, had number one tunes. And lo and behold, you two also have had a number one record, which means, of course, as I understand it, you are in the Guinness World Book as the only three-generation family to hold down the number one spot for all those years. So congratulations.
Thank you. It's the truth. Well, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, those pesky Nelsons just won't go away.
Well,
we're persistent, if anything, you know. But Grandpa Ozzy had a number one in 1935 with a song called And Then Some, he did with his big band. Our father, Ricky, and then later Rick, had a couple of number ones, over 40 top 40 hits, but two number ones specifically with Poor Little Fool and Traveling Man. And then, of course, he reinvented himself with the Stone Canyon Band with songs like Garden Party. That's really the era that Matthew and I grew up around the family home. Our pop had his hair grown out a little longer. He had a Stone Canyon Band rehearsing in our nursery. And he always had an acoustic guitar in his hand writing songs for the first time. And that's what really impressed upon me and Matthew, that writing songs and kind of having your own voice through your career was really, really important. Matt and I started out as writers. And we had our own number one in 1990 with a song called Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection.
I want to make sure everybody understands that you're coming to town tomorrow at the Arcata Theater in St. Charles. What are you calling this show? Christmas with the Nelsons? Is that right?
It's Christmas with the Nelsons. We've been doing this for, I think this is our
10 years.
And it's our favorite show to do. We do several. I mean, sometimes we do a Ricky Nelson remembered show, which
is indeed
a lot of fun.
Nelson Rock Band is going again, which is
fun too. We just caught a lick with Nelson, our own rock band. We were just featured on James Gunn's The Peacemaker on HBO. We were the finale episode of season 2. And got to sing a song of ours called To Get Back to You, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah, James Gunn turned out to be a big Nelson fan. He even titled the show Full Nelson is the episode title.
Well,
John Cena is the star of it. Great, great show.
Yes, I know that show. I got to go back and check that out again because I guess I wasn't paying close enough attention.
That was the finale episode of that. So we do those, but the show that we're bringing to town is the two of us doing Christmas with the Nelsons. It tells the story of three Nelson family Christmases beginning in the 20s with our grandparents to our father and during his childhood. And then with the two of us in the 70s when Christmas toys were designed to kill you.
And the fun part about it is we actually have a Christmas hit. You know, we wrote an original Christmas song called This Christmas, which went top 5 2 years in a row about 10 years ago. And it features Carney and Wendy Wilson from Wilson Phillips, our friends, Brian Wilson's daughters. And we kind of put together our own Mamas and the Papas. And it's nice every Christmas. We hear it over the speakers in every shopping mall across the world. It's kind of fun. And we get to celebrate that. But we love the show. It's a great show. The Arcata is a great place to play. So we're really happy to be doing it there.
You know, you mentioned your dad's song, Garden Party. And it occurred to me when I was thinking about your past and your upbringing and that particular song and where it occurred in the arc of your father's career. I mean, it's like a musical warning to you almost that, hey, welcome to the music business, but you know what? It's really fickle and people will turn away from you in a heartbeat if you don't give them, quote unquote, the hits that they want. So, you know, don't feel rest assured that because you're in the charts now, it's going to you're going to stay there. Am I close to anything that's correct in that statement?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the irony didn't escape us, the fact that our father wrote a song, Garden Party, which had that line, if memories were all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck.
Yeah.
It becomes a giant hit. And then people for the rest of his life and career expected him to sing that song about that very thing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And we were just having a conversation in the car. Like right now, we're on our way to the airport. We're in Florida. And we've got that gig at the Arcata, and we were having a conversation to pass the time. And, John, we were talking about that very thing, about being in the Wild West of the music industry right now. Yeah. There are no rules right now, so everybody's kind of shooting from the hip. They're lying when they're online going, oh, you got to do it this way and this way and this way. It's not true at all. You have to do the best you can with what you got at that moment, as our family will is a testament to. Everybody in our Nelson family did something that was specific and relevant to their particular time.
Yes.
And you know, they were also doing the best they could. I mean, Grandpa and Grandma had a lot of doors closed in their faces, and they weren't willing to play the Hollywood game to do whatever sordid deals were offered at the time. They started their own production company, did their own thing, and now the family owns the Ozzy and Harriet Show, thanks to Grandpa writing, producing, directing, starring in all 435 episodes. I mean, he was a maverick back in the day. And then our dad comes along, and he started out when rock and roll was brand new. He was insanely good looking. And that was both a blessing and a curse, being on that television show and being that good looking. He was unfairly discounted by the critics during that time. He was a huge popular success. I mean, the man sold half a billion singles in his career. But the whole statement he had to make with Garden Party, which was, hey, I know it makes you feel more comfortable to put me in a category and keep me there, but I have a lot to say. I want to write my own songs. And he wrote all those Garden Party era songs and had that hit with Garden Party itself.
Yeah.
And then when Matthew and I were coming up, I think the lesson that we really learned is, you know, as long as you're speaking your truth and you're writing from your heart and you've got that integrity, you know, sometimes you're going to catch a lick. Sometimes you're going to be playing a dinner theater in the middle of Des Moines on a Wednesday. You know, as long as you're moving forward and you're doing your own thing, as long as that's what success means to you, then you'll always be successful. If you basically pin your self-worth on your chart position on any given week, you're going to be unhappy for the rest of your life, because you're right. It is fickle and fame is fleeting. And to me, we played a show last night. We did a Christmas with the Nelson show in Palm Coast, Florida. And I was having a little bit of doubt backstage, kind of going, okay, does any of this stuff matter? And then we did an autograph signing thing after the show and ran into a young lady named Margot, who it took 5 minutes straight for her to compose herself, because we reconnected her with her own family that she was missing with our show. And it was really an emotional thing. She just said, I feel like I've been walking around in a coma until I saw that show. I just lost my mother last year. And it really kicked me back into gear and back into the land of the living. And thank you for that. And the fact that music still can do that for people. And we had no idea we were going to meet her after the show. That's our intention, is to really connect with people. That really does make me feel successful, no matter what the charts are saying. But fortunately, we've had some chart success too.
Well, you know, the thing is that you never really know who you're touching with your music and what message they're receiving, because you don't get that, you don't normally get that feedback, unless, of course, you have an exceptional instance of the one that you just recounted. You know, you're putting that music out there, it goes to a lot of different, it goes around the world. How do different people perceive it? What do they get out of it? Does it mean something to them? Most of the time, I think artists don't get a lot of feedback on that. And it's really great that you heard that from somebody. And you know then that what you're doing does have meaning to people on a deeper level than just listening to a nice tune, which I think is fantastic. I'm shifting gears a little bit here. I don't know if you remember this, but in Cleveland, in like 1990, I was doing a morning show on a radio station there that played the hits, and they were doing like a caravan of stars came into town. And here comes the Nelsons, Matthew and Gunnar, and the hair and the people going absolutely berserk, including my girlfriend, I want to add, found it all very attractive, if I may be so bold as to use that expression.
It's a family tradition, maybe not the long hair part of our pop was, he had his moment too, where it sounded like a jet engine every time he walked into a room. It was pretty cool. I highly recommend it if that happens.
I will tell you, going through that when we were 22 years old was awesome, John. It was great. It was great. You know, I suppose when we started making music for us, look, we're music fans first and foremost. And as the book will talk about, we didn't have the greatest of childhoods. It wasn't Ozzy and Harriet. And like a lot of kids out there, music was really like our best friend. Mm-hmm. It was kind of the true north in our compass. That and the relationship that Matthew and I were blessed to have coming into the world as twins kind of kept us on the straight and narrow. And you know, being able to make music that, as you mentioned, some people all over the world that we'll never even get a chance to meet in our lifetimes get something out of is really incredible, because it was the same thing for us when we were growing up and listening to our favorite songs from our favorite artists and getting something out of that. I didn't know that when we wrote the line, "Don't be afraid to lose what was never meant to be" in our song "After the Rain," that it was going to have the kind of impact that it had.
Indeed. And I think in the book, if they're listening, they might have thought I made that title up. What is the title of your book coming out in December?
It's called "What Happened to Your Hair." It was going to be called "The Boys Have Each Other," because that was kind of like the buzz phrase around our household when we were growing up. Right. But the book is really approached the same way that we approach ourselves. I mean, we take mm-hmm. the art seriously. We just don't take ourselves seriously.
It's funny, too, just me and Matt weighing in here. We could sell millions of records. We could have number ones, which we have, thank God, and have a Christmas hit, be on television shows or whatever. But inevitably, the first question is, "Hey, what happened to your hair?"
Because we did look like hot Swedish chick once upon a time. You know,
you look like hot Swedish what? Baby. What did you say?
Hot Swedish, Swedish chicks. Hot Swedish girls. Well, you know, we did. We'll take that on. It's okay. It was back in the day when spandex was still a privilege and not a right. It still is a privilege and not a right, if you ask me.
Well, I knew that this was going to be good because you guys have a great, obviously you have a great relationship, for crying out loud, you're identical twins. You know, that must be a plus, isn't it, in attempting to do just about anything?
Well, fortunately, yeah, it is in a lot of different ways. I mean, Matthew and I were the fastest swimmer. We did split from the same cell. We're old school twins. You know, we're identicals. So that is one cell that splits. And no fertility drugs were involved.
That's right.
And that was kind of cool. You know, the we're also mirror twins, John. So Matthew's a righty and I'm a lefty, which is even freakier. So fortunately for the two of us, we had this shared love of music from the time we were babies. Literally, we started when we were 6 years old. And Matt was a bassist and I was a drummer. And we grew up as a rhythm section, and we just always loved it. I'm sure a lot of it had to do with seeing our father perform when we were very, very young, from the time we were very young. I remember our first show that we saw him play at was at Knott's Berry Farm in Southern California. And just making this connection with the fact that, okay, that's our father who just went out on stage. He's in front of a crowd of adoring fans. They're going nuts. They're loving him. He's having a great time. They're having a great time. I want to do that when I grow up. That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so we started out basically like everybody else did, just about a decade earlier than most people do, emulating our favorite records and playing along to them, and then starting to write our own songs and playing the LA club scene from the time we were 12 years old, and got our first record deal with Geffen when we were 20. And the After the Rain record was made around that time, and then released it. And you know, unfortunately for us, we thought everything we were going to release was going to go number one right out of the gate.
Yeah, that's a fantasy, unfortunately.
It was great. Go ahead, John.
I'm sure you addressed that in the book, what you just said about thinking that you're always going to have a number one tune.
Well, it was kind of weird. It was the world's, kind of like longest overnight success. We've been putting in I mean, we got branded with that whole Sunset Strip hairband scene. The irony there is that Matthew and I had nothing to do with that. We started out a decade earlier in the LA club scene when what was going on were you were either in a skinny tie pop band or you were in a punk band. And Matthew and I were kind of right between the two. We liked dipping a toe in both worlds, and we're friends with, it was kind of like the Sharks versus the Jets, man. It was very polarized back in the day. And both factions gave us a hall pass because, you know, come on, we were really young. We were kids, you know,
we were 12,
you know, a couple of 12 year olds sharing the same stages with bands like the Knack and the Plimsolls and the Go-Go's and the Bangles and everything that had a the.
That's right.
Their name. Skinny tie and a the. Right. And then right across the alley when we were playing Madame Wong's Chinatown, you had bands like
The Germs.
Black Flag and
X
and X and all of those seminal punk bands. And it was a great time to make your bones in music. But I will tell you this one thing that we learned. The funny thing is the skinny tie band Poppers, the shiny, happy people, were the most messed up people. Those were the ones that were, you know, getting a fix in the bathroom and stuff before shows, or, you know, sabotaging our gear if we went 5 minutes over our set. The punkers were like, they were cool.
Yeah, they were much
nicer. So how old were you when you're exposed to all of this?
12, 13, 14. 12. There's a law in the books right now in Los Angeles that allows underage performers to get escorted in by a guardian as long as we perform and then get escorted immediately out afterwards if the place served liquor. That's our law. We actually had to go down and petition
City Hall
for that, because at first they weren't going to let us play.
Well, there was a booker there at Madame Wong's West, which was kind of our home venue. That was the one everybody wanted to be in the upstairs room at Wong's. It was a very prestigious gig for starting bands in Los Angeles at that time. And there was a booker there named Michelle Myers. And she was the kind of person, when she took ill with cancer, like the entire city of Los Angeles came out and tried to raise funds for her. She was very beloved, but she loved Gunnar and I, and really pushed for us to get our break when we were super young. And Gunnar, I can say this, Gunnar started out on drums. He was a savant drummer. By the time he was 12, 13 years old, he was better than pretty much anybody in Los Angeles, and word had gotten around. So honestly, we couldn't play for kids that were our age ever. So it was always older people. And those bands would start showing up just to watch that punk kid play the drums. And so that's when we kind of started getting a buzz. We ran into, of all people, one of the members of the Germs, Pat Smear, who plays with Foo Fighters, at one of their shows. And he kind of walked up to us with a sneer on his face saying, "I know you." And I said, "Yeah, we know you too." He said, "I'm Pat Smear. I used to be in the Germs." I said, "I know." And he said, "Yeah, shut up. What you don't know is that we were playing in Chinatown once. The Germs were playing in Chinatown, and your band, the Strange Agents," which is what we called our band back then, he said, "you guys were playing across the alleyway at Wong's Chinatown. We were at Hong Kong Cafe, the punk club, and all of us were dying to go over and see your band because we had heard the buzz on you guys, and we couldn't because we were punkers and you were new wavers, and, you know, for some reason that wasn't cool. But I just wanted you to know that we all knew about you. And we respected you for that." So that was like, I told you, I started laughing, and you just made my entire childhood worth it. All dragging the amplifiers up the stairs at Chinatown, and you started laughing. It was kind of neat, though, to have that kind of rapport after all of those years. We really worked hard for it, and we played as much as we could. It's tough to do that, though, when you're that young, but we got that experience, and I think it toughened us up.
Well, I think it's amazing, number one, that you survived all that. And I just want to remind people, as we wrap this up, that I'm talking to Matthew and Gunnar Nelson. You remember the Nelsons. They had hair. They're going to be at the Arcata Theater tomorrow night. They're in Florida. I took note of this. You're in Florida right now. Do you happen to know what the temperature is there by any chance?
It's a balmy 75 degrees right now. And we know what we're in for.
Ashley, what do we got now? What's the temperature right now, Ashley?
Should be about 28, right?
No. Is it 28? 27? 20? I'm trying to read hand signals. I just want to Well, so you're aware of the drop in temperature that awaits you. So that's
we're
good.
Swedes, remember. So the Nelsons are Swedes.
Right.
You could dip us in a snowbank and we'd be perfectly happy.
We are much happier in Nordic weather. So we are built for this. We're ready.
Welcome home. Hey,
thank you.
I got to tell you, Matthew and Gunnar, it has just really been a pleasure to talk to both of you.
It's great to reconnect again.
Yes, and thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate
it. John, you're a legend, man. Seriously, it's our honor, and we just want to thank you and thank all of the fans that are listening to your show for all of the incredible support throughout all the years. You've given the Nelson family the greatest job in the world for over 100 years, and we don't take it for granted. We certainly don't. And playing the show tomorrow at the Arcata, my pitch is come and join us for a really memorable show, our favorite show to play. It's going to take you back in time, but it's going to connect everybody. That's what the show is for us. It's like a celebration to our fans, for our fans, going back generations. And also, the book comes out on December 16th. It's available on Amazon pre-order right now. It's called What Happened to Your Hair, Matthew and Gunnar Nelson. We wrote this. No ghostwriters. It's the real thing. And the one thing we haven't done is set a record in our family for having a best-selling book, so we need your help. Go do it.
Now, if the book sucks, it's Matthew's fault.
It's always my fault. Yes, I know. But well, it does, and it's great.
I'm sure it is, and I can't wait to read it. Thanks for have a great show. Break a leg out there in Arcata, and also have a great holiday. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks to you. Happy holidays as well, John.
You betcha.